Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman.
There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril.
Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't succumbed to a dreadful cold thanks to convention attendance or back to school season. My name is Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for a gentle half hour of polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. Please forgive my husky voice. I'm afraid I'm recovering from a cold. Before you come into the tea lair, may I suggest you take a moment to admire this gingerbread house from the outside? Isn't it beautiful? I particularly like the icing windowsills and the sugared gargoyles peeping from the candy cane guttering. Come inside and sit down. The hard toffee chairs with marshmallow cushions are delightfully comfortable. And as you can see, Latimer has taken a moment to drape linen over each one so your clothes don't get sticky. I'm so glad you managed to stay on the path and not fall foul of any of the creatures in these woods. There have been some terrible stories, but now we're here, in this delightfully sweet house, with the afternoon sunlight streaming through the trees and dappling the forest floor with gold. I can't imagine anything unpleasant happening here.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived, Mr. Joseph Edward Abercrombie.
Oh, Latimer, listen to my voice.
It does sound a little dusky, ma'am. Is this a new affectation?
No, I have a cold and I can't turn Joe away.
Should I release the hounds, ma'am?
Of course not, that would be terribly rude. Besides, you've already let him in.
I know a secret recipe for such an eventuality, ma'am. It won't take a moment to make up.
You do that whilst I look at the calling card. Mr. Joseph Edward Abercrombie, B.Sc., raconteur, bon viveur, liver of the life imaginary, penman of fantastical tales to the international gentry. Well, there's lovely.
Drink this, ma'am.
It smells awful. What's in this?
As I said, ma'am, it's a secret recipe, known only to a handful of specially chosen butlers across the world. They'd take my eyes if I revealed it.
Heavens. For those of you who don't know, Joe Abercrombie is the author of the first law trilogy published by Galanz. He's a fellow psychology graduate and is a freelance film editor. Oh, it's no good. I have to drink this awful concoction.
Mr. Joseph Edward Abercrombie, ma'am.
Hello, Joe. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And may I just say what a marvellous smelling gingerbread house you have here?
Well, I'm only borrowing it. It belongs to a friend of the butler's, a rather strange woman, according to various rumours. But, yes, she does have a lovely house, but I do advise you not to nibble anything. I understand she has quite a temper. Would you care for some tea instead?
Well, of course. Tea would be wonderful.
And how do you take your tea?
White, with no sugar. Thank you very much. Sweet enough.
And would you like a slice of treacle tart?
That sounds delicious, yeah. Marvellous.
Well, Latimer made it this morning and he's an excellent chef. In my invitation to you, I invited you to bring a curio with you. I was wondering what you decided to bring with you today.
I have brought with me, surprisingly, because I came straight from there, a model of grommet from Wallace and Gromit that I made at Bristol out of clay with my own hands.
Ah, what's that Bristol like? I've seen that advertised. I've been planning to go for a while, actually.
It's a fantastic place to go with kids because there are many things there that can distract them. And that's the key with kids. And also they can be just let off the reins to run around without causing too much mayhem.
Excellent.
And of the seven that we made, most of them by children aged between 6 and 3, mine was the best. And I took great pride in that fact. And I did a little touchdown dance when it was finished. Because you've got to rub it in their faces. That's how children will learn. Lose. That's a fine life lesson. One you cannot learn soon enough, in my opinion.
Have you seen, I did the rounds a couple of, well, actually maybe more a few years ago, there was a thing which had lots of children's art on it and somebody just ripping the piss out of each of the pictures in a way that, as parents, we're totally encouraged not to do. And there was a picture of a fire engine with
all of these lines, like, coming out of the lights, presumably to try and convey that they were flashing. And it's the little comment beneath said, "Is this supposed to be a fire engine? I would rather burn to death than be saved by this hairy piece of shit."
This is the kind of criticism that I give to my children. I think you are aware early on as a parent that one of these days these children are going to eclipse you in some way. And my whole aim as a parent is to put that time off for as long as possible.
No, I noticed that on your calling card you omitted the name that you use on Twitter, namely Lord Grimdark, which I'm quite fond of.
Terrifying Lord Grimdark, yes. Yeah, I don't usually use that in normal routine conversation, I must confess. That is more of a thing I try to keep to Twitter.
Really? You mean you don't, you know, walk around in a giant cape and cackle?
Well, who knows? Maybe one day I'll start insisting upon being referred to that in meetings. I'll ask to be called Lord Grimdark and for people to kneel as I enter the room. I'm sure I have the kind of literary kudos that's required for people to obey you when you ask for that kind of stipulation.
Do you think that there's anyone who does have that kind of kudos to demand that kind of treatment?
I'm sure there must be. China Mieville would probably get that if he asked for it, just because he's held in such high regard within genre circles. Neil Gaiman, I expect he could probably pull that off as well. But it's going to be a while before I'm able to make that kind of demand of things. So I just settled for Twitter and pretending that people will obey me.
So this word grimdark is bandied around a lot these days. Do you consider yourself a writer of grimdark? Do you not believe in it? It's quite a controversial term in some circles.
It is. Well, it's one of these irritating terms that has taken on many different meanings. And it seems that everyone who uses it has their own take on exactly what they're talking about, which has made it possible for people to have these baffling conversations where they actually are referring to completely different things without realising it, which are always fun to have on the internet. It is the kind of the prime manner of internet communication, isn't it? Two people talking past each other for hours and hours on end.
Yes, and then getting very angry.
And getting extremely upset that the other person doesn't see their completely obvious point. I think it started off as a kind of purely pejorative term, meaning that which is kind of laughably over dark, over violent, sillily pessimistic, if you like. And over time it's become broader and broader, to the point where it now just seems to encompass a huge and ill-defined kind of tranche of anything that's quite dark or nasty or unpleasant. But generally it still retains that sense of being something that's kind of silly and over the top and pointless and gratuitous. And I suppose I'm taking it back. I'm reclaiming it. By calling myself Lord Grimdark, I'm accepting that maybe those overtones within my work, but refusing to be held down by the term.
Excellent. You mentioned Neil Gaiman a moment ago. I saw him give a talk and a reading in Bath recently.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And he was marvellous, obviously, that goes without saying, but...
Yeah, much better than me, I'm sure. Me when he's on your show, I suppose.
Oh, well, that would be lovely. I don't know if that would ever happen. But he talked about horror writers being the happiest people he knows. He he kind of theorised that it's because all of the kind of the dark stuff that is in their brain, they write it all down, and so it can go off into the world and kind of terrify other people and ruin their lives instead.
Yeah.
Now, I was wondering, seeing as you write fantasy and, you know, there's a tiny bit of violence.
Strictly necessary.
Yes. I was wondering, because of that, are you actually a really very fluffy, gentle person, really?
I would like to say yes, you know. Yeah, I think that I am probably in real life fluffy and gentle. Anyone who's met me would certainly agree with that characterisation, I'm sure. I think there's a degree to which people get this stuff out of their system by writing it down, but I think most writers have personalities that are not 100% efficient and effective in one way or another. And so we all struggle with our demons of productivity and venomous ambition and savage sociopathic streaks.
Yes, and envy and comparisons with other people.
Every time a friend succeeds, a little part of me dies. The motto I've lived my life by up to this point. And it stood me in good stead so far.
You have an excellent reputation, and you're very well known in genre circles. You are! But I was wondering if there's a writer that you think deserves more attention than they get.
Oh, well, I hear amazing things about this Joe Abercrombie guy. I think he's really taking the genre scene by storm.
You tart!
Not at all like George R.R. Martin's style of gritty fantasy. Someone that I feel deserves more attention.
Mm.
As a writer or as a person?
Well, that you think they're a fabulous writer, but they don't seem to get the buzz that other writers get, perhaps.
Well, I'm most of my writing I do outside of sci-fi and fantasy. I don't tend to read a lot in genre these days. I certainly did at one time, but I kind of find there's a sense of pissing where you eat. If that makes sense. I kind of find it difficult to get into fantasy things. I find I see the joins much more than I would with other stuff. And also, I find that I take on the tics of whatever I'm reading.
Mm.
So I try to avoid fantasy and kind of read much more widely. One guy that I'm reading at the moment who I love, that I'm writing with, I really admire, is a guy called Robert Lowe. He's historical fiction. Mostly Vikings is what he's known for. And he wrote this book called The Whale Road, which has a few sequels, and I just find them very nicely written to my taste. I like things that have a very strong tone of voice. And with historical fiction, I like things that really get across the kind of alienness of the past and the strangeness of the mindset that Vikings had. And he really does deliver very strongly on the voice and the way they see the world. And I think with fantasy, epic fantasy at the time that I write, you often get very modern thinking people. It's a kind of a modern Western world mindset transposed onto a kind of medieval sandbox sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And often historical fiction that's very well and faithfully rendered, I find, can be a lot more alien and strange than fantasy often is. So, yeah, Robert Lowe, he's a guy I'd certainly recommend.
There's a series that has been on, I think it was probably BBC4,
yeah.
The Time Traveller's Guide to Elizabethan England. Did you see any of them?
No, I didn't, no.
They were quite interesting in some of the stuff it revealed, and one of the things that I found really interesting was how he was talking about the fact that people believed in witchcraft and that it sat very comfortably alongside the church, which is very contrary to a lot of the kind of the fictional stuff that we see of the times. That,
right.
You know, we have this idea that it was all kind of Spanish Inquisition and nothing else. And he was talking about the fact that people used to regularly go to witches for help, including the clergy. And that's something which I was really shocked by and thought, well, that really is not my perception of the past, because it's been so skewed by so many fantasy things.
Thomas. Stopped by for one of my aromatic poultices, I'll have you know. His gentle warts have been playing up again a little, bless him. That type of thing.
Yeah. But it was something which, you know, the witchcraft and the church I never saw as kind of being comfortable side by side in society, and yet it talks about it, you know, he being a historian was really quite fascinating about it.
Yeah, which is I think that's the kind of thing that really I really enjoy about historical fiction is the differences from the common perception, if you like.
Mm, and how frightening it was.
Yeah, how short and unpleasant life often was back then.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So it seems that every time I go to a convention and I meet more and more writers, I discover that...
Horrible, aren't they?
Oh, they're lovely, really. Well, I couldn't speak for all of them. I haven't met all of them. But I have noticed that a rather high percentage are role players. Are you?
I certainly was. Too many children now, and I kind of, as a kid, I guess between the ages of about 12 and 16-ish, the main thing that I did with my free time was role-playing. It was dice and character sheets and making up adventures and all of those things. And so, yeah, I mean, that was a big, big part of my kind of growing up and of my formative years, and I think, you know, certainly my writing owes quite a bit to experiences I had and ideas I had and things that I read and experienced in that time. And I gave up in my, well, I suppose in, when I was 17, 18, I moved away and went to university. And so, you know, the role-playing group split up. We all went our separate ways. And so I haven't really done it much since then, except via the medium of computer games, I suppose, to a degree. And also one memorable session that I had a couple of years ago in Detroit, where I played D&D with a whole set of other fantasy authors of varying kinds. Pete Brett was there, Brent Weeks, Pat Rothfuss was there, Scott Lynch was there, Mike Cole, a few others. And that was good fun, definitely. But I wouldn't say it was done particularly seriously. It was really done more of a kind of, in a comedic fashion, you might say.
A beer and pizza game, that's what we used to call them.
Yeah, pretty much so, yeah. Yeah.
So what kind of characters did you play when you did play?
What kind of characters? Troublemakers, thieves, people with shady pasts and shadier futures, people with hoods, often, devil may care, strangers, risk takers, that kind of thing. And also occasionally just dull fighters with very little personality.
Do you think you'll ever go back to it?
To being a dull fighter with
personality?
Pretty much. It doesn't take a lot of role playing for me.
Well, you don't need to go back to kind of being a shady character who's a troublemaker, because...
That's true. Well, you know, I have managed to live my dream in that particular instance. Would I go back to it? It's just the time, isn't it?
It really
is. We had maybe 5 or 6 hours in Detroit, and we literally got down a length of corridor and into a room. That was about it. And we'd made the characters the night before as well. And it was literally, I mean, you know, it took hours. And when you compare to, you know, you've got to get people together, everyone lives 1,000 miles apart, and, you know, PlayStation does provide a much kind of easier bite-sized way to experience, not necessarily the same experience, but in some ways an equivalent one. I think it makes it very hard for me now to kind of ever find a group where that works. I do play board games quite a lot. I know you've had Dave Bradley on, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, so I lived in Bath with Dave and a lot of the other SFX guys and Future Publishing guys, and we will meet up quite once every couple of weeks, a month, and we'll play board games for an evening. We'll play Settlers of Catan and kind of Seven Wonders and Ra, things of this kind, quite involved board games often. And that I very much enjoy doing. That gives you some of the same buzz without the huge amount of preparation time needed.
And I guess the same kind of social aspect.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, often the games will kind of start to be somewhat ignored, if one is honest, as the evening wears on. yeah, I mean, I think role-playing games of that old-school dice and paper type, it's a young man's game just because young men have time.
And young women, I'd hasten to add.
And young women, I apologise. When I was a role-player, I'm sorry to say that it was largely a young man's game.
Well, yes, I mean, I was in the minority as well, because I did a lot of role-playing at university, and in our RPG SOC, it was, oh, I should say, 80% men?
Yeah.
So.
I went to an all-boys school, and so the involvement of women was extremely limited.
Yes, you had significant modifiers acting against you there.
Yeah, I mean, those women who did, in one way or another, find themselves on the campus were unlikely to make their way to the role-playing area, I think it's fair to say.
So you live in Bath. I'm just down the road from Bath.
Yeah, no, I do.
So what's your favourite place to go? Could you recommend any nice places to go in Bath?
I could recommend, certainly recommend Kalonna and Smalls, the fancy coffee shop.
Oh, where's that?
That's just off Queen Square.
Oh.
I'm to be found there most Friday mornings, where I go there and work for a couple of hours in the morning, and they have amazing coffee. And often the kind of connoisseur's coffee place that is getting to be more and more, you know, common these days, they're a real pain in the arse. You know, can't have sugar, and people look at you funny if you ask a question.
Oh,
but they're great there. And they basically have 3 different coffees on every day, 3 different filters and 3 different espressos, and you can kind of just have whatever you want. They've always got new stuff in, and they're very, very enthused about what they do, and it's just a great atmosphere to sit and do a bit of work, I find.
Ooh, I'll have to seek that place out. That sounds lovely.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely, if you like coffee, it's Mecca for the coffee lover.
I mean, I'm a tea lover, but I do like a nice cup of coffee in the morning, it must be said. But Bath is such a beautiful city, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's great. And quite a varied city as well. I mean, people think of the kind of Georgian Bath, obviously, which is very important and very beautiful. But there's a lot of other bits to it, and a lot of varied housing stock and different areas. And it's really, I guess the other thing is that if you've lived in London for a long time, which I did, a lot of the towns that are near London have all the kind of culture sucked out of them by having the big smoke on the doorstep, if you like.
Mm.
Whereas is close enough to London to get up there easily, but it's far enough away to still have, you know, quite a bit of its own thing going on. So I think it's a nice compromise from that point of view.
Mm. thinking about where we're taking tea inside this cottage. I understand it's been in a...
Don't eat any of it, didn't you?
Sorry?
You said don't eat any, didn't you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You haven't nibbled, have you, Joe?
No.
Quick.
I'm sure it's fine.
We'll say that those crumbs are from the treacle tart.
Well, absolutely. Or just, you know, simple erosion.
Yes. Wear and tear.
Yeah, a certain degree of, you know, things falling apart due to entropy, I would think.
Yes, I'm sure that the owner will understand. Perfectly.
Yeah.
I was wondering what your favourite fairy tale is.
Favourite fairy tale?
Hmm.
Interesting question. Well, I mean, you'd have to say Hansel and Gretel, really, given the surroundings, wouldn't you? My kids have a really spooky edition of Hansel and Gretel with pictures that they kind of really scare me. And I have to be strong for them when I'm reading. But I really don't enjoy it.
Mm. The original Grimms are actually quite awful, a lot of them.
They are. It's all been sanitised and cleaned up in an outrageous way. I mean, when people say that, you know, modern fantasy is filled with scatology and horror and meanness and evil and, you know, you've only got to look to the simplest of medieval stories or ancient Greek stories or Norse myth to see stuff twice as bad. So it's been going a long time, this dark undercurrent.
It has. There's a story in a collection that I've got which is about a child that was very badly behaved that died, and that even when it was in the grave it was restless and its arm kept coming out of the grave, and so I think it's the mother or something breaks off, it might be a willow branch or something, and has to keep beating the arm until it goes back into the grave.
Children you have to beat even after the grave.
I know.
It's a nightmare.
It's just so awful. So I always, you know, skipped that one over when I was reading them to my little bean. But some of them are really quite gruesome. I understand that the first law is being adapted into graphic novel form. Is that right?
It is, yes, it is. We're kind of it's a very, very long process. So it's early on. I think about a quarter of the way through the first book now. Which has taken some time to reach this point. And we're kind of serialising it 3 pages a week for free, but then it's also available on Comixology, the kind of digital purveyor of comics, and it will soon be available, the first 4 issues, as a print collection. So, yeah, it's a kind of a long-term ongoing project is the idea, but we'll see how it catches on over time.
Are you scripting it and... handed over to an illustrator, or is somebody else adapting it, or...?
It's being adapted by a writer, by an experienced comics guy, and then I'm kind of looking over the scripts and making sure that he hasn't, you know, inflicted horrors upon my stupendous work, and making sure it stays true to the ethos and the idea and the commitment to a high standard of quality that I've always maintained through all my work, as any reader will tell you.
Excellent. Let me just check the teapot. Oh, the teapot is empty.
Oh, dear.
And that's the last of the treacle tart as well, I'm afraid. And seeing the way that you've been gnawing away secretly on that windowsill,
see. Sorry, it's fine. No, it's all fine.
I think it's probably time to leave. So, it's been an absolute delight having you here today, Joe. Thank you so much for your time.
No, pleasure.
And perhaps I will see you at a future convention at some point. Are you going to World Fantasy Con?
I will be there. I will indeed, yeah.
Splendid.
Yeah, definitely. And if you should be lent any other confectionery dwellings by sinister women, by all means, give me a call again. I'll pay you another visit.
Wonderful. Well, I may come over and say a quick hello at World Fantasy Con then.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Look forward to it.
Excellent. Oh, thank you. Do take care as you go through the woods. I understand they can be dangerous.
No, I'm sure it'll be fine. I mean, woods, schmuds, you know, what could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
This way, sir.
Oh, I think the potion is wearing off. Marvellous stuff, if a little short-lived. Now, Latimer, Joe might have had a little nibble of the windowsill. Is that a problem?
It depends if he manages to leave the woods before the owner returns, Mum.
Well, he's keeping to the path for now, but those wolves do sound rather close.
And hungry. They're closing in.
Oh, dear. Hang on, they're rolling over in front of him, showing their bellies.
Ah, they recognise him as Lord Grimdark, Mum. I understand most of the wolves have posters of him in their dens.
So those strange shadowy beasts lurking just off the path over there aren't likely to be a problem.
I believe they're waiting for his autograph, Mum.
Oh, he'll be fine then. No need to worry.
Not necessarily, Mum. Look at what's blocking the path ahead.
Great Scott! Is that a unicorn?
Yes, Mum. And it seems to want to nuzzle him.
But I thought only virgins could touch unicorns.
I believe Mr. Abercrombie has children, Mum.
Oh, yes, good. Otherwise that would have been rather embarrassing. What does it want, though? It won't let him leave the wood.
Perhaps it's trying to stop him from leaving and truly becoming Lord Grimdark, as he spoke about earlier. Perhaps it's trying to redeem him through the power of love.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Latimer.
Sorry, Mum. Perhaps it's just misguided.
Joe's putting a cloak on. He said he didn't have one. Aww, that unicorn is so sweet and friendly and... Ah! What's Joe doing?
Look away, Mum. It's terribly ugly.
What's he doing to it?
Terrible things, Mum. He's twisting and corrupting it, befouling and besmirching it. Now it's nothing but a filthy mockery of all that once noble beast stood for. You can look now, Mum. The worst of it is over.
Heavens to Betsy. It's an offence to rainbows and happiness. Look at him, climbing onto its back like it's nothing more than a warhorse of the apocalypse.
Yeehaw!
Well, there he goes. He did a terrible thing, but at least the sunset he's riding off into is pretty. In fact, I don't think I've ever seen one so beautiful.
I believe he's riding off into the best-selling sunset, Mum.
Lucky bastard. I need some honey and lemon.
Yes, Mum.
Well, dear guests, thank you for joining the slightly scary but probably fluffy Joe Abercrombie and I today. The next time we take tea together, we'll be joined by author Danny Ware. As Lord Grimdark rides off to wreak havoc on unsuspecting mythical creatures, I'd like to pass on a recommendation from the lovely Andrew Reed. If you recall, I asked for martial art film recommendations, and he suggested I seek out Brotherhood of the Wolf, which sounds rather interesting. Thank you, Andrew. I raise my cup of tea to you, and my Lemsip too. I'm rather delighted to say that I've started to play Diablo 3 with my other half, and it's really rather enjoyable. It's exactly what you'd expect, just much prettier, and each character class feels different, which is nice. I was wondering, dear listeners, what your favourite couch co-op games are. I'm desperately fond of the Borderlands games, and have enjoyed Gears of War too, though I have to switch off certain parts of my brain to play it. Do you have any recommendations for games you can play at home with another like-minded soul, without having to go onto the interwebs? If so, would you be a bless poppet and leave your recommendations and reasons why you love that game at www.tandjeopardy.com. Well, until next time, my honey drops. Now, Latimer, I think I need to have a rest. Find a new location for the tea lair, would you? Perhaps somewhere a little less edible.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman. Go to www.tandjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.